And it is noon on a Tuesday, so that means we are here for another episode of Everything Atlanta. And in the studio with us today, this is Matt Gardner. We got, as always, we have Mr. Danny Broadway.
Good morning, Matthew.
Good afternoon to you, Danny. And we also have Darren in from our office today. Darren, can we hear you?
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, look at that. Look at that. He is a face for radio. There's no question about it.
Thank you very much.
And we also have Jeff Woodward. Jeff Woodward has a lot of different backgrounds, and we're definitely going to dive into that. So, Jeff, welcome. I appreciate you sneaking out to see us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, this weekend, Danny and I were up in Knoxville watching the UT-LSU game. I had a good time. It didn't turn out so well for your Volunteers, Danny, and I apologize for that.
No, we played 15 minutes of football in a 40-minute game.
Yeah, unfortunately, you got to play past the first quarter there sometimes. Yeah. So, but what was interesting on the ride back, that you know, three-hour ride back, we got into a conversation about this Occupy Wall Street, and you know, you and I had some pretty interesting conversations on that. And I'd like to Stone, you been out there protesting on Wall Street yet?
You know what, I haven't. But my business partner Lee Cantor was in New York over the weekend,
yeah.
And his favorite part about that experience was there was this homeless-looking guy. He described him that had buttons that said "Occupy Wall Street" on it, and to commemorate this event, you could buy a button to celebrate the effort at anti-capitalism. And he didn't think they saw the irony in that.
Wow, that is something else. And I even heard this morning on the radio that they were looking for a corporate sponsor for Occupy Wall Street. I mean, where's the reality in that? That we're here to come against corporations, but we would love to have a corporate sponsor. Danny, any ideas who they could probably get to sponsor that effort?
I think they were actually looking to Merrill Lynch for that spot, weren't they?
They weren't available by phone or email. Was the
well, that way they wouldn't have to move the bull. It'd be right next to them.
Right there next to them. So, you know, I'm going to read on their Facebook page. Obviously, there is a Facebook page for this, and there's about a 250,000 people that are fans of this, at least through Facebook. Let me just kind of read the insert here that they have on there as they describe themselves. It says, as we gather together in solidarity to express a feeling of mass injustice, we must not lose sight of what brought us together. We write so that people who feel wronged by the corporate forces of the world can know that we are your allies. So that's pretty strong words. I mean, that's not we're here just to gather and hope something turns out pretty favorable for us. That is a pretty strong looking to, I mean, allies. That's kind of like wartime.
So the leader is Darth Vader, right?
I guess so. He's coming back.
The stormtroopers are there in the building.
It's crazy. So, you know, Jeff, I'll ask you, you know, what's your take on this? You know, as a small business owner and being very successful the past 15, 20 years doing that, what's your perspective of this Occupy Wall Street?
Well, I'm not too happy with Wall Street at the moment, and I'll tell you why. Because, you know, I made a good living for some time selling investment properties to California investors, mostly people that saw a value of owning a residential investment property. And in the 2005, 2006, 2007 seven range, we sold a lot of brand new investment properties to people. Unfortunately, we went from boom to bust so quickly due to the mortgage meltdown that Wall Street certainly had a big impact on, and it absolutely crushed a portion of our business. We went from selling, you know, 50 to 100 investment properties per year to these investors to literally zero overnight because there was no funding. There was no mortgage loans to be had. So the pendulum swung way too far in the other direction. And, you know, that has led us to, you know, uncover other buckets of business. And, of course, that didn't help the regular residential investment market either. And, unfortunately, I'm seeing a lot of these properties that these investors purchased back then are now going to foreclosure. They're so far underwater on their loans. They're upside down in terms of the rent that they can receive, that they're good people in a bad situation. It's not a liquid investment, but they're making the choice to walk away from those.
So, I mean, what is that process? I mean, I guess you just said it. They have to walk away from it. I mean, what does that mean, and how does that trickle down?
Well, it absolutely crushes the real estate market because in Atlanta, metro-wide, 40% of the sales as of the second quarter of this year were distressed properties. Every time a new distressed property hits one of our nice communities in the Atlanta area, it sets a new comp, and that's what sets the value. That's what the appraised values go on. People that aren't upside down who want to refinance, it impacts what they're able to do. So it just keeps feeding itself. Every quarter, there's more foreclosures, more distressed sales. Now, the here on the north side of Atlanta, that figure is only about 20%. On the south side, it's much higher. So the south side has been crushed compared to the north side, although the north side has been crushed as well. And if you know anything about distressed sales or foreclosures, Georgia can foreclose so much faster than most other states out there that the banks can get it done literally in a couple months compared to, you know, nearly a year in California.
Well, I mean, have you seen other type of investors, maybe overseas or something like that, coming into Atlanta looking to buy these properties as a future investment, or is that even happening?
It's happening, but you're talking about, you get some groups or conglomerates, call it a mutual fund if you want to. They're going to go in and buy a lot of properties. But without the financing, you know, your everyday investor, unless they have 25% down, is not going to be able to buy that investment property. So certainly, yes, there are investors out there interested. Can they get loans? It's much, much harder. It used to be when we were selling these properties that the investor didn't have to show their income, didn't have to show their assets. They just had to have the down payment and good credit and a job, okay? Those loans don't exist anymore. So that pool of people, those entrepreneurs, those people with self-employed income, they're completely wiped out of the market now. So it's literally you have to have some big buck foreign investors to come in and buy these distressed properties.
And you mentioned, you know, that was the bulk of what you did before, and now you've diversified a little bit. And tell us a little bit about that, how you got into not just, you know, buying the properties, but managing them and that natural movement over and across to that opportunity.
Well, I think when we did sell the properties, I will say these people they're not upset with me. Everybody was essentially drinking the same Kool-Aid, to be honest with you. And the entire market, you know, went to pot. So it wasn't just the homes that I sold. It was the homes that Sure. everybody was selling, frankly. They had the level of trust to come back to me and say, I would like you to manage the properties for us. So, you know, it's real simple what we do. We take care of the home on behalf of the investor. We get it leased up. We find the tenants. We try to put good tenants in there. We handle the ongoing management and maintenance of the homes, and it's a tough industry, but you got to do that right to make it a good investment. So I have a chance to, I guess, help these people out that are in underwater sometimes on their values.
Well, I'll ask a tough question, and I've asked this of several people who have been in the real estate market for a long time, and they can probably answer more or less emotionally than anybody else. Where do you point the blame to? I mean, in your mind, I've heard a lot of different answers, but if you had to say, you know, I saw this happen and this was probably the biggest thing that's the culprit, what is that?
Probably the liberal lending environment to start with. There were too many people unqualified to purchase homes, okay? And it's not a right in America to own a home. Unfortunately, that's what occurred, and everybody could buy a home. Almost everybody could qualify, regardless of income, credit history.
Under one of the plans, Fannie Mae, Fannie Mac, Fannie somebody. Well, there were so many different ways back then to get money.
Well, there's a mortgage-backed security market. There was always an investor to buy that loan in the background, and that's what makes the housing market sing, is the demand for mortgage-backed securities. Okay. And it's not just the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac 30-year fixed products. It's also the subprime environment that's out there. And that's what killed us, is that investors were buying up these subprime products. And that's what Wall Street was portfolioing and selling. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones that got hit the hardest and the quickest and the worst. So none of those programs exist anymore. In Atlanta, you know, our economy was based upon growth, job growth, and the housing market. And now, without all those people to come in and buy homes, it's crushed the housing market and it's made a terrible impact on on our economy. So,
well, and that hasn't increased the renting opportunity for your properties, you know, that are under management with Lincoln Homes?
It absolutely has. Great. It's been great for the rental market. Mm-hmm. Although there's plenty of inventory out there, and the rental markets are relatively flat. But we can rent a property generally in 30 to 45 days.
Right. I was going to say it probably helps just not the value of what you can get for the property, but at least to get the property rented, right?
Yeah, the bottom line is if you don't have, it's like the homes we live in, right? If you don't have to sell your home now, I mean, just hold on. So these investors that maybe they purchased their home for $220, maybe it's worth $160 right now, which is, you know, that's a pretty calm.
It happens, yeah.
Yeah, that's a scenario that's going on right now. If they can rent that property and maybe have a little cash flow or break even and somebody's paying their mortgage for them, eventually it'll turn out to be a good investment. Mm-hmm. The problem is that if there's that one little stumbling block, whether it's a health issue, a job loss,
new
or
roof,
or something happens and then they can't afford to do it, that's when that it goes back to the bank and it starts that cycle all over again and impacts that community for everybody else.
How long until that, obviously this is the toughest question to ask. Are we even close to getting to the back end of that, or is it 10 years out, 5 years out?
Oh, I honestly, everything, it looks the worst right now. If I had to guess, I'd say we're 5 years away.
Really?
But everything's cyclical. We know that. I mean, mm-hmm. It goes up and down, up and down. But we have to somehow find a way to get these distressed properties out so we can get back to the normal, buy and sell opportunities that are out there.
Until I'm seeing a little less in my neighborhood. You know, I mean, we had 5 of the 280 properties in our neighborhood that went up, and then maybe, we've had a couple more trickle out. But, we're starting to see that real people are beginning to sell again, not just the banks,
Right.
And it's like you said, it's now getting the value back up to where they can sell in the correct numbers instead of, 100, 200,000 less when the bank's just trying to get out of the situation.
Right, exactly. And Atlanta is such a community-driven marketplace. You have to analyze the data at the community level. And that's what I was talking about. If you look at the Metro Atlanta statistics as a whole, it's nauseating, right? But if you get down to your particular subdivision, it might not look so bad. And it may be one or two comps that are impacting it. Those comps, if nothing happens in the next 3 to 6 months, those comps will be less influential and they'll go off the new comps.
Because it's literally, we're seeing stuff, sell with the same type home, same builder, even same floor plan sometime, within 150,000 to 175,000 difference of each other for the exact same home. Again, depending on how stressed it is, what is the situation. But the higher end are selling every now and then. And it just, again, some of those might have granite and the others don't. But it's just amazing the difference. And I know when we bought our house here, when we moved from Tennessee to this area, the idea of buying a house without knowing the square footage was the most amazing thing in the shopping process. In Tennessee, you buy based on square footage. So if the house had 2,000 square feet times it's worth $15, whatever, and you bought the house, whatever. And here you look at it and you don't even get to know the square footage until you pay, $600 to have a estimation done on the home.
Right.
I don't get that.
That has changed now. The listings do have the square footage in there.
Oh, really?
Unfortunately, many times it's based upon the tax record. And the tax record, just like the taxes itself, if you're in Fulton County, are you basing your buying decision on Fulton County's tax record of the square footage?
Right.
No, you're not. So what I tell people is, if you're serious about knowing that square footage, it's not hard to figure out square footage, okay? Take your tape measure, go into the house, and measure the place, mm-hmm. right? And then you have to compare it against the homes in that community. But what we're seeing is, in 2005, 2006, if you had a home in White Columns, it was a very nice home, and it was near the pool and the tennis courts and everything, and very desirable, it would sell. But and so would the one that was right there close to the road. problem now is in the community, the one that's close to the road that doesn't have the nice backyard, mm-hmm. that one's not selling. It's the premier properties. It's the nicer properties. So you really, if you want to sell your home, you got to put some money into it, invest in it, make it the best that it can be, right. and that's going to increase your chances of selling dramatically.
Well, you know, obviously people are saying that it's a buyer's market, which is obvious. If Darren gave you $1 million today, what would you go do to invest that for the future? Would it be in real estate? Would it be in what? What would you do with your background?
Well, I've never had a great deal of success in my Wall Street investments, and I do know real estate. So I would invest in real estate. I would try to invest in distressed sales. My preference would be to do it in vacation type areas. You know, I would prefer to buy a distressed home in Hilton Head than I would Atlanta right now. But it depends on what you're trying to get for the future. If you're looking for appreciation, that's what you do. If you're just looking for cash flow and return on your investment, I just ran some comps for a guy in California the other day, and we manage a couple properties in a small community in Gwinnett, 3-bedroom, 2-bath ranch homes that, you know, 4 years ago were $135,000 homes. Now you can buy one for $65 or $70, and they're going to rent for $1,100, maybe even $1,200 a month. So if you pay cash for one of those and you do the math on that, I mean, you're getting, you know, an 18 or 20% return on that money per year, and you have, you know, you will get appreciation, not dramatic, but the market will come back. That is a phenomenal investment. You show me a Wall Street investment or a mutual fund that can do that for you.
Right.
I'd like to know about it. The downside of housing, it's not a liquid investment. If you have to sell, you can't sell quickly.
What about like condos, apartments, small apartment communities, things like that? Would that be an investment that would catch your eye?
You know, I'm not an expert certainly on commercial properties, but and they value commercial properties a little bit differently, but. If the investment and the return, it's all about the numbers. I mean, it's all about the numbers. You crunch the numbers, and if the return works out for you, then it's not too much risk, then it's a great investment, and you're certainly helping the real estate market.
Well, a lot of our listeners are somewhat younger, you know, coming up in their 20s and early 30s. And let's say that there's a family out there listening, and they own they're renting an apartment. Right now, and they're paying $800-$900 a month for this 2-bedroom apartment. What would be your recommendation for them to do over the next year as far as a residential? What are they going to get accomplished?
Oh, there's fabulous opportunities out there for them. And as much as I don't like to see those short sales and distressed properties, I mean, for the person who is patient, those are some excellent opportunities. On those bank-owned properties or short sales, you can put an offer in. It might take the bank a long time to make a decision, but if you're not in a hurry, you can get a very good deal. What I would avoid is going into a community where there's just a few houses built, a lot of empty lots. You have a builder that's potentially gone bust. Go to an established community where the pool is there, the tennis courts are there, there's homes there, not everything's in foreclosure. The yards look nice. So buy a short sale in one of those types of areas. Don't try to go swing for the fences, so to speak, and, you know, buy the one of the lone 3 or 4 homes in a 200 home community that never got going, because that's going to be quite a while for that one to come back.
So there, you feel like you've got an equation now. Even I think for a while there, no one had that equation of what was going to happen. Where was the bottom? Where was the top? You say the numbers, do the numbers. I think it was hard for a while to do the numbers because nobody knew what numbers to do. I mean,
right.
And so you feel like at least we're back to a baseline where you can sit down and have some good faith in a couple of numbers.
Well, I think, you know, if you have a good real estate agent that's going to look at the comps and is knowledgeable about these particular communities, they're going to help you assess your risk. You know, what are you looking at? What's worst case scenario? Where can I go from here?
Right.
Again, if you're buying this as an owner-occupied property, you're buying it for the schools for your kids. You're buying it for, because you have to live in this house, right? Don't expect this. If you're doing it to try to double your money in 2 years, I think you're going about it the wrong way. That's mm-hmm. not very realistic. If it's the home you're going to live in, find something that's a good investment over the long term. And don't spend just a few thousand bucks less to get a home that seems like a great value, when actually the best value is the home that's more updated, that has a better lot, that's not too close to the street, that, you know, that the community has a pool and tennis, it's in a good school system. Make a good overall decision. Don't try to save a couple shekels, because in the long term, it's not going to help you out.
Gotcha. Well, instead of sitting here stealing all the incredible information that you're giving us here, let's talk.
I'm fooling everybody.
That's right. Let's talk a little about you. We have mentioned that you have the property management firm. It's called Lincoln Homes. Tell me the reason somebody would want to get involved with a property management firm instead of doing it themselves. You know, instead of trying to manage that property themselves and get rid of some of those headaches and that type of thing, and who would be the right person to engage you for that?
Well, you know, most property managers are going to tell you, and it's the truth, that managing your own properties is extremely difficult, and everybody will tell you you really need to set up a barrier between owner and tenant. And
yeah,
that's not only from a communication standpoint, but it's also from a legality standpoint. You want to hold that property in an LLC, okay, so that you're a little harder to find, that you're a little harder to sue, because, you know, I have faith in human nature, but things do happen, and you know, people can get hurt in homes, so you really need to protect yourself. And honestly, we hear a lot of sob stories in the property management world. You know, lost my job, a medical expense. But at the end of the day, the owner doesn't want to hear those stories. They can isolate themselves from those stories and make a business decision. This was an investment for them. They feel bad. People have lost their job and can't pay their rent. But at the end of the day, this was an investment. And turnover and vacancy is the biggest killer that there is. If you've got a good tenant in that property, keep that tenant in there as long as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. And but if it's not working out, get rid of them as quickly as you can.
And maybe knowing that there's a professional company managing that property isn't a negative, it's a positive, because they know that when the water heater breaks, all I've got to do is call Lincoln. And
right,
they're going to take care of it. I don't call Bob, who 3 weeks later gets hot water back in my house when he's right, not out of town.
Yeah, the tenant likes the property managers, too, because they don't have to deal with, you know, the money coming right. You know, the owner's not going to jump on it. And when you live in your own home and the hot water heats and your wife's complaining that there's no hot shower, you're on it. You're on it pretty quick, aren't you? But, you know, your tenant calls, the property manager is going to get on it much more quickly. And we have, obviously, a group of contractors, and all we do is farm it out to the contractor. Contractor makes the call, and we pay the bill, and everybody's happy. And that's a happy tenant is a good thing for the owner. It really creates
like
a win-win.
Like you said, don't go vacant. Yeah,
do not go vacant.
Gotcha. Well, great. Well, to talk more about you and the natural progression of property management, Lincoln Homes diversified and came up with an opportunity, Clean Green.
That's right.
And under that management, you saw other needs. Tell us about how that came about and how you grew Clean Green.
Well, this isn't rocket science. Most property management companies are doing it or have done so in the past. But, you know, back in 2004, we recognized the fact that we were carving out and sending a lot of business to carpet cleaners and window washers and gutter cleaners and, you know, people that did light landscaping and lawn care and that sort of thing. So, you know, we started doing it ourselves, and then, you know, about a year and a half ago, we decided, you know, we're actually pretty good at this. You know, we can get just about any carpet clean. If you can get the carpets clean in some of these rental properties we work with, then we feel like we can get them clean in all your all's houses too. So we took
the equipment.
Yeah, we had
the
equipment.
Talent.
We had the people.
Right. Right.
So we just took it in a different
Sounds
direction.
Sounds like the opening to a great TV show. We had the equipment. We had the talent. I don't know. What do we call that show? I mean,
Everything Atlanta TV, I guess.
That's right. That's exactly right. So that's the clean. We'll
the
talk
six
about
million-dollar man.
Right.
Episode one.
We're too old if we're talking about that, actually.
That's right. But that's the clean side. Tell us about the green side. Tell us how you bring that into it to make sure you protect the families.
Well, you know, the green theme is obviously, you hear about it, you know, all over the place by right now. And, To be self-serving, it's a very marketable thing. People like to know, but you got to live it too, okay? So, you know, for carpet cleaning, for instance, we do a couple different methods. We use a low moisture hot water extraction method, and we also use a dry method, completely dry, no water used whatsoever. And we only use Green Seal certified stain removers and carpet cleaning supplies. I don't even like to use the word chemicals because it sounds bad, but I will tell you that not everybody does use Green Seal certified products. And far as we're concerned, that's the gold standard for a green product is the Green Seal certified. Mm-hmm. So that's what we concentrate and that's what we use on is. You know, if you can get something clean using an organic-based product, why not, as opposed to something that could be detrimental to your kids, your family, your pets?
Well, how does that impact a customer of yours economically? Is it more expensive to go with cleaner, organic-type things, or what's the process?
Not at all. It is not more expensive whatsoever. Our dry cleaning method is a little more expensive due to just the process that we use, the organic sponges, so to speak. It's actually called the hose system, and the way it works is you take a giant vacuum cleaner in a sense with huge rollers on it, and you put down a sponge like material that is lightly moistened
like a foam?
With it almost looks like a foam. It almost looks like ground up sponges. Okay, and what you do is you work that into the carpet, and it gets down into the fibers of the carpet, and those rollers clean the fibers of the carpet. And it's ideal for high end carpets and certain carpets with specialty backings to the carpet. Every carpet has a backing to it, and
that's
some
what
of the
when you see it woven into
yeah
some
exactly
material.
Yeah. You know, carpet, most carpet, it's the stuff you see every day. It's plastic. Did you know that? Mm-hmm. All it is plastic. And how carpet is made is imagine your shower head and somebody taking plastic and just driving it through that shower head and then twisting those yarns.
Mm-hmm.
That's what carpet is. Until you get to some fancier blends and wools and that sort of thing. So, well, we use that dry extraction when people want to walk on their carpet right away, when they have a certain type of backing that will not allow it to get wet.
Mm-hmm.
It has a real, you know, it's a nice organic process. A little more expensive just due to the cost of the organic sponges that we use.
Right, but you can't reuse those. They're probably not cheap.
Can't reuse those. Right. No, and they're not cheap.
Yeah, it's not like throwing some water out there and putting a little shampoo on.
Right, right. And we're only as good as the carpet cleaner that sometimes it was in front of us, too. What you don't want to do is leave a bunch of residue behind, okay? That's probably the biggest bugaboo in the industry is the guy's doing the quickest job. He wants to kind of blow and go, and he puts too much chemicals in your carpet. If you don't rinse it, getting out, it's like you're taking a shower every morning. If you didn't rinse your hair after putting the soap in it, it's not going to look too good at the end of the day. Well, the carpet's the same story. You got to get everything you put in out, or otherwise you're not doing the right thing
for
Darren, your carpet.
Well, Darren, maybe you're not rinsing your hair good enough. He kept looking at you when you gave that analogy right. There.
Well, at least I have enough hair to wash.
That's right. That's right. We can throw some sponges in there, buddy.
There you go.
Hey, don't forget, they can't see us.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. Thanks, bud.
So tell us about your service area, how you set up trucks, personnel. Give us the ABCs.
Well, we've got a couple of trucks out there, and keeping with the green theme, we use the, I don't know if you've seen the little Ford trucks that everybody has now. I can't even remember the name of the model, but
yeah.
It's a little four-cylinder truck that we use as opposed to the giant vans that run right. on diesel and run in your driveway while you're getting your carpets done. But, you know, our kind of niche, we think, is we're really good at a couple of different things. So if you go to our website, which is gocleangreen.com, and clean, by the way, is spelled C-L-E-E-N.
Yeah, I was going to say that's neat. He's got clean. It's C-L-E-E-N. So.
And but if you go there and look at our website, you'll see that what we specialize is in bundles, okay? Because we're really good and our core things that we do are carpet cleaning, area rugs, we'll do power washing, but we're really good window washers, chandelier cleaning, ceiling fan cleaning, etc. So we try to do a bundle. Our theory is if we're going to take the truck to that house, we'd like to stay there as long as possible, doing as much as possible. That becomes time efficient for the client and cost efficient for the client. If you want to call a power washer, let's say you're having a big holiday party, Thanksgiving, a bunch of family members coming into town. If you want to get your walkway power washed, your driveway power washed, if you want to get your windows cleaned in and out, if your chandelier in your foyer you can't reach, your ceiling fan in your great room you can't reach, you want somebody to get up there, clean them, replace the bulbs for free, and oh well, while we're there, we can do your carpets as well. We can do that a whole lot cheaper and a whole lot faster and save you a lot of time and energy with contractors coming in and out of the house. So that's really, you know, our forte and what we specialize in. And to give a big plug for ourselves here, you know, people have to trust us to let us into their house to do the work. And we recently went through a big deal with UPS. UPS World Headquarters here in Sandy Springs is about a 750,000 square foot building. And because we impressed the facilities manager so much, we were cleaning his windows at his own home. I didn't even know he worked for UPS. After the fact, he contacted us and he said, you know, you guys did such a great job. I'd like to bring you to our facility and do a trial. So they brought us in on a weekend. We spent 8 hours with a crew of four guys. And we did an entire floor. Just one floor out of 14 took 8 hours for a crew of four. But we did such a good job with that. They've brought us back. Building 35 is another building down there. We did all the common area carpets a couple weekends ago. We did all the executive offices in the plaza at UPS. We did their windows. So, and I can assure you, if UPS lets us into their building, then you should feel safe enough to let us into your home, because getting in there, you have to have a badge. You go through security. There's multi-layers of security, and they made sure we had the proper insurance and background checks on our employees and all that sort of thing in advance of even hiring us.
Congratulations. That's a fantastic story of working hard and that hard work paying off.
Appreciate
with relationships.
It. Thank you.
So what about your service here? Will I go down to the airport? You go further? I mean, what circle around Atlanta do you guys cover?
We really concentrate in that wedge between 75 and 85 and up and down the 400 corridor. We do, you know, go outside of our service area for, you know, I'll just be honest, bigger jobs. An example, a real estate broker called us the other day from Kennesaw. We don't normally go to Kennesaw, but he had a vacant home that needed a whole lot of stuff done. So we were able to send a crew of four people in there on a home that was listed and do their windows, do the power washing, do all the carpets, have the house cleaned, you know, just put some pine straw and everything out to make the home look great. And we saved the homeowner and that agent an incredible amount of time by coming in there and banging it out in one day, as opposed to trying to hire, you know, four or five different companies to get the same stuff done.
How often should a person have their carpets cleaned, or, you know, what these services, what is the rotation that you usually set up on that?
Well, it's really about use. Most carpet cleaning companies will tell you 12 to 18 months, which makes all the sense in the world. The key to the homeowner is to vacuum, okay? Vacuum, 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 and that's what
you hear that? Our Danny and I's wife hope they listen
right.
to that one.
That's right.
Does it count when your wife's pregnant, though?
No, you become the vacuum.
I'm the vacuum. That's what happens. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You want to vacuum that carpet two or three times a week, and that's one of the things we obviously do before we actually, you know, clean the carpet as well. If a carpet cleaner comes to your house and isn't going to vacuum before they clean the carpet, I suggest you show them the door, because is a key component to doing it right with cleaning the carpet, especially with hot water extractions. The purpose of cleaning the carpet is to raise the fibers up and have them stand up on end so you can get all the loose debris down. And when you actually clean the carpet, it's like having a muddy carpet. Do you want to pour a bunch of water? What happens when dirt and water mix turns to mud, right? So let's get the dirt out of there first.
Well, you know, in our mailbox almost every day are the flyers for three rooms for $99. I mean, do you offer those kind of services, or is that a completely different offering that you guys have?
Well, we price based upon the room and the size of the room. We are not big coupon people, and I'll be honest with you, the carpet cleaning industry, it doesn't have the best reputation in the world. mostly due to bait and switch. And it's true. If someone tells you that they're going to clean your whole house for $79 or $89, generally it's just not the case, you know. Mm-hmm. And if it is the case, then, you know, they're trying to get you to come in. They want you to come in, come to the home, and then they're going to, you know, once they get inside there, the prices are going to go up, or they're going to add services or this and that. And if you don't kind of go with the program, they're going to be out of there absolutely as quickly as possible, and you're not going to get the job you wanted. They're probably not going to vacuum, and they're probably not going to use their chemicals. They're not going to lose money on the deal. So I'm not saying everybody that does coupons does a bad job and does bait and switch. That's not the case, but just be careful out there.
Well, Jeff, again, appreciate you coming out. And if you don't mind, take just a second and state for the listeners exactly how they can get a hold of you and what's, if they're like what they hear today and they've got some opportunities they want you to come look at, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
Yeah, do the property management first. If somebody out there is listening, they have a property or two, they're like, I'm just tired of the headache.
Right.
Where do they reach you on that side?
Well, they want to call Lincoln Homes, and the best number to get a hold of Lincoln Homes is 678-428-1960. That's 678-428-1960. And Lincoln Homes can talk to you about your property, what you have, and help you out with your property management needs. On the Clean Green Home Services side of things, the best way to reach us is 404-310-2160. Again, 404-310-2160. Or you can go to our website, which is gocleangreen.com, GOCLEEN green.com. You'll see that we're members of the North Fulton Chamber of Commerce. We're members of the Better Business Bureau, and we use only certified carpet cleaning technicians, bonded and insured, all that good stuff. So if you have a holiday bundle, you got family coming for Thanksgiving or Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever you celebrate, or just need some work done around the house, we can get a lot done in one day and make the place shine. So please give us a try.
Fantastic. Well, I will also say we've enjoyed having you on the show here at Everything Atlanta.
Enjoyed it.
Everything Atlanta is sponsored by Yepser Internet Strategy, which Matt is a partner of. Are there any specials this week that
anything special out there on the internet? Darren and I were talking about this the other day. When people cruise the internet looking for companies, let's say that they were looking for a company that you do. The first thing that they do, whether it's unfortunate or fortunately, is they pass judgment based upon what they see. Because gone are the days that they pick up the telephone and start asking questions. They don't even email anymore, really. They want to go in their pajamas at 2 o'clock in the morning or whenever they want to through iPhones and laptops and Blackberries. They're going to go pass judgment on companies based upon how they look. When they open up a fan page or a Twitter account or a website, they're going to pass judgment based upon what they see versus the content that's behind what they see. So the biggest suggestion and the tip of the week is to make sure that when you want to have people pass judgment on you, make sure that your stuff looks good. Make sure that the designs are good. Make sure the content is current. Nobody wants to go to a blog and look at the date, and it's April of 2011. I mean, that's just not relevant. So our tip of the week is to make sure it looks good, make sure it's relevant, make sure it's current, make sure it's interesting at the end of the day. So when they do pass judgment, you pass that judgment, and they pick up the phone and give you a call. So that's the tip of the week, Danny.
Fantastic. Thank you, Matthew. And thank you to Yepser Internet Strategy for sponsoring Everything Atlanta. And Matt, another exciting week. One thing I did want to say, our prayers are out there for Dan Weldon, obviously his family.
Yeah, that is tough.
That was a tragedy and, obviously a dangerous business, but every day they get better at making it less dangerous. But put a final prayer out to those guys and, really excited to look forward to next week's show. Matt, I guess you'll be back next week?
I'll be back next week. As long as Stone, can I come back next week, buddy?
Yes, sir.
We'll have Stone. I don't know if Darren's invited, though.
I'll be here.
He was mean to me.
Darren, you were too chatty.
Yeah. I apologize.
You got to rein it in.
I'll be quiet. Better.
Fairly good, then.
Well, like I said, you don't know anything Atlanta until you've heard Everything Atlanta. Come back every Tuesday at noon right here in Alpharetta.